That's good. That wasn't supposed to be funny, people. That was just an observation. When you start talking about living for Jesus, sometimes we have a good idea of what that individual identity is. But then when you put all those individual identities and you run them together, how are we supposed to get along as a group? The dynamic that happens in the city of Corinth, and really what Paul talks about in this chapter is really from some of their deals with their manifestations of the Holy Spirit. But he really talks about a systemic approach, kind of a systems approach. When Paul describes the church, he never, ever describes the church as an organization. He only describes it as an organism. And so we start talking about how we function as members of the body. What he's talking about here, and I've kind of coined a phrase, what he talks about here is the concept of corporate individuality. Now that sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it? Like jumbo shrimp and Kentucky football. There's two things that don't go to, don't hate Roll Tide. Anyway, there's things that go together, all right? And so Paul is trying to tell these folks how as an individual you relate to this group. Stephen Glenn in his book, Raising Self-Reliant Children in a Self-Indulgent World. And I've used Dr. Glenn's book for my pattern of youth ministry forever. You have to have three perceptions. I'm capable, I'm significant, I influence what happens to me. Four skills. Interpersonal skills, how I deal with me. Intrapersonal skills, how I deal with you. Systemic skills, how we work in a system. And judgmental skills, how I just make decisions based on values. Well, those systemic skills are what's happening here in Corinth. The city of Corinth had a population of 250,000 free people. That's just a little bit larger than the city of Huntsville, if you don't count Meridianville and Hazel Green and New Hope and those little outlying areas. The city of Corinth had 400,000 slaves present in it. You have 250,000 free people, 400,000 slaves, and the gospel comes to Corinth, and people are converted. And on a Sunday morning, you have the owned and the owners worshiping God together. Do you think that creates any dynamics? Do you think a serve-yourself fellowship meal is awkward when a slave has the ability to walk through the line with you or ahead of you? Slavery in the New Testament sometimes had two forms. Some was like we think about it, oppression and mistreatment. And sometimes it was just a job, like being a butler or an indentured servant or a bond servant. And so a slave could be married, a slave could have his own house, a slave could have kids. So you've got a slave who's a Christian, he's married to a Christian, they have Christian kids, and 10 years later he's qualified to be an elder. You think that creates any problems in church? You've got a person who's a slave but an elder in the church, you have any submission issues there? You got two distinct group of people worshiping in Corinth together. You've got Jews, people who came out of the Old Testament tradition, the Levitical code, and there, some of their things that they brought in from the law of Moses, it's just kind of hardwired in them. It wasn't wrong to do those things as long as they weren't seeking justification by the law. It was okay. And sometimes it's just hard to get past tradition. Some of the guys were talking yesterday that those of us who were born in the South have to say sir to men that we think are older than us. The kids will not call me Lonnie. They won't call me Lonzo. It's Mr. Lonnie. Mr. Jones. It's cool with me, but it's hardwired in Southern terms. Well, you've got these Jewish people, and they come to worship, and there's lots of things that they brought with them. One was their food laws. A Jewish person, with a broad paintbrush, they didn't eat things that were predators or scavengers. Now you take all the cloven hooks and the cloven hooves and the ruminant stomach and all those things. If you really boil it down to, they didn't eat anything that was a predator or a scavenger. And if you want to understand the Levitical food code, that's it. If it tore flesh or ate something dead, a Jewish person was not allowed to eat it. The exception is in the water. In the water, they could eat anything that had fins and scales. But everything that has fins and scales, that's a predator fish, swallows it whole. There's no rending or tearing. They couldn't eat sharks. They couldn't eat catfish. They couldn't eat crab. They couldn't eat lobster because they tear their food apart. So a Jewish person comes into this assembly, and it's a fellowship meal day. There's things he couldn't eat. There's things he wouldn't eat. Now, when a Jewish person thought something was unclean, there's things I'm not supposed to eat. I had some intestinal adventures in 09. I was on a hunting trip. My large intestine ruptured. They've rearranged my piping quite a bit. I took myself into the hospital in Anniston, Alabama by myself. I drove myself to the hospital. It was 17 degrees. I was blowing sweat everywhere. Got out of the truck and realized, hey, my deer stands in the back. I need to put that in the cab. And I moved it back and walked into the emergency room. And the lady behind the desk, if you walk into an emergency room and the lady behind the desk goes, ah, you look bad. Let me just tell you. Well, they worked on me quite a bit. And there's stuff I'm not supposed to eat. The stuff I'm not supposed to eat, I love. I'm not supposed to eat bread. There was pizza here yesterday. As much as a human could carry. I walked in this morning, the dudes from OVU, and by the way, these guys from OVU, I speak at a bazillion youth rallies. And college recruiters come in, they do their song and dance, and they rock. These dudes have been here from the time we set up to the last service. And I appreciate that. That's the way to conduct business, fellas. And I'm not saying anything bad about the Harding kids. They had like 9,000 hours to drive, but they came to perform, and I get that. But these guys been here. They brought donuts this morning. I've never met a donut I couldn't be friends with. Oh, listen. You know, I don't look at a donut and go, man, that is disgusting. I look at that and have these fantasies. If I was allowed to eat donuts, and I'm not, but if I was, I'd take a Krispy Kreme donut, put a pat of butter on it, melt it in the microwave, take a Wendy's Junior Frosty, dump it in the hole, squirt honey on it, and pass out on the airplane. It'd be awesome. That's what I would do. I got an amen in the corner there. That's how you eat a donut. Now, I see those donuts, I'm like, man, I wish I could have one of those. You walk into that Jewish fellowship with some pork or a catfish or things with blood in it, and it's like, they'd gag. It'd be like us looking at roadkill armadillo. The Gentiles didn't have any hangs. They ate blood. They ate things strangled. They ate food out of the idol's temple. Imagine trying to work that out on Youth Rally Food Day. God told Moses, hey, when you build an altar to me, you don't approach that altar with steps. You approach that altar with a ramp, lest the nakedness of your priest become uncovered. Now, God knows people. If you got that priest walking up some steps and he catches on that robe and he stumbles, we're going to laugh. That would probably be bad in an Old Testament worship. If he's walking up that ramp and his robe hikes up and you see the inside of his thigh, God said, I don't want that. I just want you to be distracted. Come up on a ramp. All the way to the New Testament, those Jewish men were clothed. You read a Jewish man in the New Testament gathering his robes and running. He's breaking social protocol. It is significant when a Jewish man ran to meet Jesus. He was telling you something. I'm willing to throw caution to the wind and get to the Messiah. That picture in Luke 15 when the father runs to meet that boy. He had to pull that robe up to run. God said, your father will act inappropriately when his kids come home because he'll run to meet them. They were hyper modest. Women covered from head to toe, men covered from shoulder to toe. Gentiles, not so much. They had a gymnasium in Corinth. They ran the Isthmian Games. All those games, the precursors to the Olympics, all those games were competed in the nude. The word gymnos means naked. You think working out with dudes in Under Armour makes you uncomfortable, hey? You'd pay good money for some Under Armour at the Corinthian Games, let me tell you right now. And it was just kind of standard fare. They didn't have anything. It wasn't a big lustful thing. They were just comfortable with the human body. Guy gets up in church. Okay, the youth group's going to play flag football on Saturday. Oh, wait, the Jewish kids won't play on Saturday. The youth group's going to play flag football on Monday. No shorts. Jewish kids, no shorts. Wear football robes. Gentile kids, no problem. And you imagine what shows up at the ball field. Well, you've got to work past all these issues, getting along with people with different cultures and different definitions and different values. So Paul addresses this. And he addresses in pretty simple terms. The first thing he's going to talk about is he'll spend four or five sentences talking about different but same. As we read this text, listen for that concept. He'll actually use the words different, same, different, same, different, same. Then he'll list some specific differences, and as he delineates the differences, he'll use the word same. So you'll see a specific difference of the word same, specific difference of the word same. Then from different to same, he'll switch and talk about many but one, and one and many. And then he'll say, hey, there are three things that shouldn't happen in a body. There are three situations that if they happen in a body would be absolutely ludicrous, ridiculous. And that's where we'll get our application. The opposite of the things that shouldn't happen. So let's read together. 1 Corinthians 12:4. There are diversities, differences in ministries, but the same Spirit. There are differences in ministries, but the same Lord. There are diversities of activities, but it is the same God who works all in all. You see that? Different, same, different, same. The manifestation of the Spirit given to each one for the profit of all. For to one is given a specific, for to one is given the word of wisdom through the Spirit, another the word of knowledge through the same Spirit. To another, faith by the same Spirit. To another, gifts of healing by the same Spirit. To another, working of miracles. To another, prophecy. To another, discerning of spirits. To another, different kinds of tongues. And to another, the interpretation of tongues. But one and the same Spirit works in all these things, distributing to each one individually as He will. Different, same. Different, same. Different, same. It doesn't matter how different we are, we're connected by the same thing. The same Lord, the same God, the same Spirit, members of the same body. And he's hammering that to his audience. And then he switches into many but one. And what our brother read for us, Ron, for as the body is one and has many members, but all the members of that body being many are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body. Let's stop there. If you're a member of the body, and the body is the church, and the church is the body. If you're a member of the church, the only way to get in is baptism. Done. Mic drop. You talk to somebody about their relationship with God, and if they've not been baptized for the remission of sins, they're not a member of the body. If you're here today and you've not been baptized for remission of sins, you're attending church, you're not a member. Because membership in the Lord's body can only come through baptism. For by one body we were all baptized, by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, whether, I don't use the word whether conversationally. So I kind of throw a little Alabama translation on that. When you see the word whether, let it play in your mind from now on. It don't matter. That's Alabama English, okay? For by one Spirit we're all baptized into one body, and it don't matter if you're a Jew or a Greek, it don't matter if you're a slave or a free. You see how that, he takes those four categories of people that they struggled with in Corinth. The slaves, the frees, the Jews, the Greeks. And it really doesn't matter how you label yourself. Once you get in the body, you got in the body the same way. You got in the body for the same reason. We had a sin problem. He'll do the same thing in the book of Romans. It doesn't matter if you're Jew or Gentile. You got a sin problem. Only way to solve the sin problem is grace and faith. And so he starts talking to these people. It doesn't matter if you're a Jew. It doesn't matter if you're a Gentile. It doesn't matter if you're a slave. It doesn't matter if you're free. You're part of the same body. You're different, but you're same. There's a lot of us, but we're one. Then he hits it. For in fact, the body is not one member, but many. If the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I'm not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I'm not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? First thing that can't happen in a body, you can have one of your body members say, I don't like my job, I quit. You can have a body member say, I'm not going to participate there. You know, a foot looks and says, I don't like wearing shoes, I don't like many stinky socks, I'm done, I check out. You ever tried to stand up when your foot was asleep? You ever tried to answer your iPhone when your hand's asleep? Sleeping there, curled up on it, and the iPhone goes, use that stump and try to beat that touch screen? Hey, when one part of your body doesn't work, what happens? It affects the rest of your body, doesn't it? Anything can happen. If you got a little wound on your finger, something in your eye, whatever happens, if your body part says, look, I'm not going to work today, it shuts it down. What's the most important part of your car? if you're a teenage girl, it's a brake, pedal on the left. Learn to use it and use it liberally. You know, my daughter, when she was learning to drive, would get this close to a mailbox at 80 miles an hour. I'd make her cut the grass. She'd get this far away from the fence on a John Deere tractor that goes 3 miles an hour. I said, look, we got to live. Either give me that much space in the mailbox or give me that kind of closeness on the fence. I don't care which. You know, we'd go driving down the road. I'd go, two birthday cards and a power bill. What? That was what was in that mailbox. It went right by my face. I could tell. One or the other, okay? But what's the most important part of your car? We can stand here and debate automotive theory all day. Injector points and universal joints and steering columns and brakes and if you're driving down 77, you get a pop-up thunderstorm and you don't have a $7 piece of rubber that does this, you'll park that car. Because the most important part of your car is the part that you need to work when it's not working. And that's your job. And that means you have a responsibility to this group. My daughter played volleyball as a kid. She played 4 years of college volleyball. I believe she's the shortest person to ever step foot on a Division I court. She's 4'10" tall. They paid her $1,000 for every inch of height she had. She needed to be 6'4", okay? She got paid 4 years to go to college and play volleyball. She asked me one time, said, Dad, I want you to make me a shirt. I want the sentences to be in the shape of a volleyball. So you get those three stripes here, those three stripes here, those three stripes here. And so I wanted to say there is no I in team, but there is in unity. I hustle. I care. I pass. I show up. I cry. I dig. I pass. I sweat. I practice. She wanted everything she did as a team member, my job. There is no I in team, but there is in unity. And Paul says, look, you can't say, I don't like my job. I'm too young. I'm too old. I quit. I don't like my job. They won't let me lead singing. I quit. No. You take your, and you accept your responsibility. And as a teenager, you've got responsibilities to the church. In the book of Acts, Paul brings these bundles of sticks to a fire. They've spent the night in the sea. There's a fire built big enough for maybe 300 people. And Paul brings this bundle of sticks. A snake comes out and bites him. And we get all, that's our part of the story we like. If you can give me a rubber snake, an overenthusiastic deacon, and a VBS skit, that is YouTube gold right there. But that's not the point of this story. The point of the story is Paul is putting sticks on a fire he didn't build. Now, why is Paul putting sticks on a fire he didn't? Because he likes it. And when that contribution plate comes by, if it's a dollar or a quarter, your job to put something in it, because you've been blessed with money if you're a teenager in America. You have high-dollar phones, high-dollar shoes. Most of you have debit cards. And when that plate comes by you, you got a job. And you spend money at a vast rate. How come none of it ever comes to God? That's your job. And it doesn't have to be what I could contribute. But you have to make a contribution of time, of energy, of money, of participation. You show up at this worship service, you've got something to do. You sing, you listen, you pray, you concentrate, you write cards. You've got a job. I don't know what your specific job is, but everybody's got a job, and just because you don't like your job doesn't mean you can't do it. Paul says, first ridiculous situation, a body member can't say, I ain't doing this. No, we must accept our responsibility. Second thing that happens. Verse 16. No, verse 17. If the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If the whole body were hearing, where would be the smelling? But now God has set the members, each one of them in the body, just as He pleased. And if they were all one member, where would the body be? But now, there are many members, yet one body. Second ridiculous situation that can't happen in the body, but can't be all one thing. If your body was just an eye, it'd be a monster. If your body was just an ear, it'd be a monster. If your body was just a foot, it wouldn't be complete. The body has these very different factors and these differences because we all have a job to do and we all can't be the same thing. You show me a congregation, I can measure the health of that congregation by the diversity in the congregation. If we're all the same color and the same socioeconomic background, it's a social club. It's not a body. The health of your youth group is we got athletes and we've got academics and we've got nerds and we've got theater people, and you have no reason to be friends with each other, except you all love Christ. That's when you know you got something authentic, because the thing that binds us together is Christ. And so it's not that we're cookie-cutter images of each other. It's not we have the same political views or the same socioeconomic background or from the same culture. It's we have Christ in common. And he says, you can't have them all the same. When Jackie and I moved to Huntsville, I was 21 or 22. It might have been just turning 22 or 23. She was 19, 18 when we married. So she's probably all close to 19 or 20 when we moved to Huntsville. Big, huge city. She's from Velvet Ridge, Arkansas. I'm from Oxford, Alabama. We end up in this large congregation. There are 12 high schools represented in our church. One Sunday morning after church, this lady says, we'd like you to come to our house for dinner. I thought that's going to be a long afternoon, because where I grew up, dinner was after dark. She meant lunch, but she said, anyway, I thought, okay, we'll go. Executive vice president for the Chrysler Corporation and his wife attended, at least executive vice president for Chrysler in Huntsville. We went to their house. We walk into their house, a beautiful, opulent place up on North Parkway. We walk in the door, and Miss Chun announces, we're going to have dinner in the formal dining room. I'd never been in a formal dining room. We ate dinner at one room in our house where the table was. And if you didn't eat where the table was, you ate where the TV was, you ate on TV trays. I'd never been in a formal dining room. We turn the corner, and there's this massive expanse of a room. This hardwood table, this china cabinet, and they were fat forks and skinny forks and long shorts and short forks and big spoons and little spoons and serrated knives and sharp knives and dull knives and butter knives and glasses and cups and saucers. And I looked at that and I thought, are we going to eat? Are we going to fight? There's enough equipment here. I could take over a third world country. You know, Jackie kind of leaned into me and said, you will not embarrass me. I know what that meant. I said, well, what am I supposed to do? She said, you eat what Miss Chun eats with what Miss Chun eats it with. I said, what if I don't like it? She said, refer back to rule one. You will not embarrass me. So I sat down on the table and kind of watched Sister Chun, and it's not rocket science. You go from the outside to the inside, and it's good. Why is there that much stuff on a table? What in the world? You ever tried to eat soup with a fork? You ever tried to negotiate through a steak with a spoon? There's a guy in Arkansas, true story, they said he ate honey with his peas. They said, why do you like honey and peas? He said, it doesn't taste very good, but it keeps them on my knife. You understand he's using the wrong equipment for the wrong job. You know why there's so many different things on that table? They've all got a job. And God has set the members as he pleased. And you're God's table setting. And some of us are butter knives, and some of us are saucers, and some of us are napkins. And some of us are plates and cups and butter knives and serrated knives and steak knives and sharp. And we all got a job to do. And you can't do my job, and I can't do yours. And instead of me trying to be you, I need to be me. There's nobody else like you in this congregation. You're unique. When I run into something that's different in my equipment box, my climbing harness, my tack vest, my hunting equipment, it's not weird, it's customized. I'm a short little guy. My bow is 26 inches from wheel to wheel. It has a 26-inch draw length. Most men in this room couldn't shoot it because it's too short. You'd be doing this. You'd like Cupid plucking that string. It's designed for me. And God said, I've designed something for me, and I put you on my table just where I want you. We spend so much of our lives, especially young people, worrying about what we're not, that we never master what we are. I through a long story, the city of Huntsville wanted me to do some adventure-based education with some kids. I was not willing to use an outdoor piece of property that the city owned because I don't like to take kids to cliff sites when I don't know the kids. They don't write newspaper articles about the five kids you take out there or that you bring back. They write newspaper articles about the one kid you leave out there. So I said, I said, if you'll build me an indoor climbing wall at one of the local gyms, I'll donate time to teach on it. We ran what we call the Lakewood Project. We did four sessions of teaching kids to top rope climb. And we did it for about 10 years and would have after-school programs and summer camp programs come in. And we teach choice-making, decision-making, things about anchors being what you rely on and the ability to encourage one another. and we taught these classes. One of the classes that we always taught was a skill called belaying. Belay means to use a rope or hold a rope firmly. And when you teach amateurs how to rock climb, you do what's known as top roping. So the anchor is above you and the rope is doubled. You tie into the climber, and as they climb up, you pull the rope through a friction break. And there's a real specific hand sequence you use. Your brake side hand never goes past your guide hand, so you're always swapping. It's a four-point system. And so we were teaching kids to belay. We teach them to belay each other. And then on the fourth class, you have to belay one of your parents. It's a really awesome experience when a seventh-grade kid has his dad up in the vertical environment. You get dad back on the ground. He says, "Hey, you were screaming at your dad. What's up with that?" "Well, there was a foothold, and he wouldn't listen to me, and he couldn't see it, and I was scared." Welcome to parenthood. You experience for a minute what your dad felt since you took your first breath. So, you know, if he gets a little psychotic when you learn to drive or play football, calm down. That's you understand. Well, this one particular class, the Academy for Science and Foreign Languages, came to class, and there was one kid in the class named Chris. Now, I'll never forget this guy. He only had one arm. I don't know why they send one-armed kids to climbing class, but he was there. And you could manipulate the climbing holes on the wall and make it easy for him to do, and we accommodated as much as we could. I got ropes hanging everywhere one day. We're teaching a belay school because you have to have a certificate to belay. We're making kids raise buckets of water up and lower it down smoothly without spilling water. And I got kids everywhere, ropes everywhere, chaos everywhere. Somebody tugs my harness. Mr. Line, what? I need to learn to belay. It's Chris. I said, "Well, Chris, typically people use two hands to belay." And Chris said, "Well, typically I just have one." Not like, you know, "I'll go get that other one today." No. He said, "I only have one arm." Little guy in the seventh grade said, "Don't tell me what people with two hands do. Tell me what I can do with the one hand I've got. Outside of this book, that's one of the most significant statements I've ever heard in my life. I'm not worried about what people with two hands can do. What can I do with the one hand I've got? I don't care what a church with 600 people does. What can you do with this 130 people right here? I don't care what a church with 9 trailways buses does. What can you do with a 15-passenger van and a couple of pickup trucks? I don't care what someone like 3 times your age can do. What can you do being 16 years old with that energy and that creativeness? I don't care what somebody half your age can do. What can you do with that age, experience, and financial base that you've got set up? Quit worrying about what you're not and discover what you are and max it out. We kept 2 boys this summer because their mom went to basic training and we volunteered to keep them so they wouldn't have to move to Ohio. Before that, I did not have a basketball goal at my house. Anybody shocked at that? I got a judo mat in my garage, but I ain't got a basketball goal. I don't play basketball. I'm 5'4". My legs were any shorter, they wouldn't reach the ground. But get on a mat with me. To put your hands on me, you've already got to corrupt your balance. I may not beat you, but I'll throw you once. I promise you, and it's a fun ride. Paul says, look, quit trying to be like everybody else. Just be you. What is your place in the kingdom? Accept your responsibility. Number 2, accept your limitations. And then number 3, we'll have to run through it, is accept others. The eye cannot say to the hand, "I have no need of you," nor again the head to the feet, "I have no need of you." No much rather the members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary. And those members of the body we think to less honorable, on these we bestow greater honor. Our unpresentable parts have greater modesty. But our presentable parts have no need, but God composed the body, having given greater honor to that part which lacks it, that there should be no schism, no division in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. And if one member suffers, we all suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. Now you are the body of Christ, but members individually, corporate individuality. You are the body of Christ, but members individually. So what Paul says, the third thing can happen in a body is a body member can't look at another body member and say, "You're not important. You're too young, you're too old, you're too what?" You can't look at a body member and say, "We don't need you." So what he's teaching there is we must accept one another. And the key here, Mark Sanborn in his corporate team building stuff, says if you belong to a large group of people, you must receive from that group of people attention, belonging, and support. If one member suffers, we suffer. If one member's honored, we're all honored. I give you attention, belonging, and support. Now, sometimes you want to measure the health of your congregation. Have one of the elders stand up here and say, hey, everybody get a visitor's card out. Write down these three words, attention, belonging, support. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the worst, 10 being the best, write down how much attention you get from this group, how much belonging do you get from this group, how much support do you get from this group. Add your numbers up, total it up, let somebody at math give you a grade. We had 70% of our people say we felt like they got attention. We had 90% of our people say, hey, we feel like we get belonging. Had 40% of our people say, you got some work to do. Now, to be honest, 2 weeks later you come back and you say, hey, everybody get a visitor card out. Write down these three words, attention, belonging, and support. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the worst, 10 being the best, how much attention did you give someone this week? How much belonging did you give someone this week? How much support did you give some? You know, there's a lot of people who think it's important to be visited in the hospital, but don't visit hospitals. There's a lot of folks who want you to come to their wedding shower, but didn't go to yours. And if you want it, you got to give it. It's a reciprocal relationship. And so you start doing attention, belonging, and support. And there's a dozen ways to accomplish it as an intergenerational minister. I tell my folks, here's what you do. Sit in different places in the building. Because right now, when you stand up, you got about 9 people you can get before they have to go to Golden Corral. Okay? And if you'll change places, you can get a hold of them. Get your church directory. And if your name starts with a B, go to the Z's. And say, this year I'm going to go through that thing backwards and call everybody in it. Have a Coke with everybody in it. Send a card to everybody in it. I was a little church in Burney, Missouri. And on Sunday night, they got their collection plates and passed them out. And they had a card in there with everybody's name on it. And as it went by you, you grabbed one. And that's who you called that week. That's who you prayed for that week. And you might have a 7th grader call a 70-year-old. And you might have a guy in college call a little family with a 1-year-old. And all of a sudden, you get this mix of people, and we're not just running around with the youth group or running around with the Middle Marys or running around with the Owls. It's we all get together at the same time. And sometimes it's a one-on-one connection. Sometimes it's a three-on-one connection. And all of a sudden, if you just through the year said, I'm going to branch out, you look like a body, not a group. And then after he says this, accept your responsibility, accept your limitations, and accept others. He goes through this series of rhetorical questions. Can everybody do this? No. Is everybody one of these? No. One of the biggest mistakes we make in our Bible is we stop when the chapter stops. Look at verse 29 in the middle of these rhetorical questions. Are all apostles? Are all prophets? Are all teachers? Are all workers of miracles? Do all have gifts of healings? Do all speak in tongues? Do all interpret? But earnestly desire the best gifts. Yet I show you a more excellent way. If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and do not have love, I'm a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And if I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith that I could remove mountains but do not have love, I'm nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not love, it profits me nothing. Paul says, you know, I don't really know what your job is. I don't know what your job is. I don't know if you're a fork or a spoon. I don't know if you're a knife or a goblet. I don't know if you're a napkin or a plate. You know what I know you can do? Love. I mean, that's what he says. He says, and it really doesn't matter if you're so eloquent that you speak like an angel. If you speak and it's not because you love people, then it doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter how smart you are. If you could understand the mysteries of the universe, if you explain those mysteries and it's not because you love the people in this room, then it really doesn't matter. And it really doesn't matter if you've got faith so strong you could make a mountain move. If you don't manifest that faith out of love for others, then it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how rich you are and how philanthropic you are. If you gave everything you had to feed the poor, and if you even sacrificed your own body, if you did that and it wasn't motivated by love, it doesn't matter. So when Paul talks about how we live like Christ in a body, accept my responsibility, accept my limitations, and accept others. And if you don't really know what your specific job is, your generic job is simply love the folks in this room. Hey, what's the greatest thing in the law? Well, that's easy. Love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. By this shall all men know you're my disciples, if you have love one for another. And if we love each other, then I'll do what I need to do to be responsible to you. And if I love you, I'll accept my limitations and not be jealous of you, and I'll just do my thing. And if I love you, I'll accept you even though we're very, very different. and I'll give you attention, belonging, and support. Two essential questions. Number one, are you a member of this body? If you're not a member of the body of Christ, by faith, repentance, confession, and baptism, you die to the old self, you're buried, you rise to walk again, you put self on the cross, and you're done. If you are a member of the body, are you functioning like a healthy member? Attention, belonging, and support. My responsibility, my limitations, and everybody else. And if you're not and you need to change that, we give you a chance to do that with the Lord's invitation. We'll baptize you. We'll study with you. We'll pray with you or for you. The Lord's invitation is open. Come forward while we stand and sing.